The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Colombia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. It's me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Bogota, Colombia. This is episode 247 of the Colombia Calling podcast. Thank you to all those people who tune in, week out, and regardless of who I've got on the show, regardless of what nonsense I might be spouting. But that's the reason this podcast continues to stay on the airwaves, because you guys listen. Something is being said. Something is positive here in Colombia. And yeah, we want to talk about the good things, the bad things, and everything else. And this week, we've got a very special guest. And I like this. There's a sort of synchronicity here, because in episode 131, and I won't expect you to remember all the way back, but at episode 131, I spoke to an actor, a young actor called Andrew Perez, who's based in Los Angeles, and they were talking about the imminent release of the movie that they put together here on a shoestring budget in Colombia. So it's like an American indie movie, and it's called Bastards y Diablos, and it was filmed, you know, all over Colombia. There's shots in Cartagena and so on and so forth. And it's really exciting because now we wind back and wind forwards, and it's episode 247, and the guys are here in Bogota because Cine Colombia have given them, granted them an opportunity to release their movie, Bastards y Diablos, on the 18th nationwide, 18th of October, around Colombia. So I've got the other leading actor on the line, and he's just up the road in Chapinero, but that's the way things are. Dylan Porter, originally from South Oregon, but, you know, journeyman actor, I'd say. So welcome on Columbia Calling, Dylan.
Thanks for having me, Richard. I'm glad to be here.
It's very exciting. You guys are back here in Colombia after all of that. It's been a long time since you filmed it and so on, and now you're getting a release here in this country.
And it feels like a release. This feels exactly what we wanted for the film, to bring it back home, to share it with all of Andrew's family, with everybody who appeared, all of the actors, both professional and, you know, what they call natural actors. We have our premiere on the 9th, and then, yes, on the 18th, we open in Medellin, in Cali, in Bogota, and the three of us are going to each take a city. I get Medellin, I don't know how I lucked out, and we'll be, having hosting after parties and Q&As, and really trying to make it, though it is with Cine Colombia, which is a large company, we're really trying to maintain our loose shoe indie spirit vibe.
Well, I mean, and this, you know, I talked to Andrew all those months and years ago now, and this is, I was looking it up just now on the IMDb website, 2015. I mean, we're now 2018. And so the story is two estranged half brothers and an adventure through Colombia. The father has passed away. I don't want to give too much away. But it looks, the cinematography looks absolutely phenomenal. I mean, you brought all the guys down here to do that.
Yes, I mean, and it really, you know, it's really Aaron, the director, and Peter Grigsby, who's the cinematographer. The two of them have a great working relationship. Mm-hmm. And I can't tell you how many sets I've been on where the cinematographer has an idea and it's not kind of conducive to what the director had imagined, or the director is sort of bossing the cinematographer around, you know? And these two men work effortlessly together and really complement one another. Mm-hmm. And Peter and Aaron will have a half hour sort of chat before, and then Aaron will come over and talk to Andrew and make sure that as the scene progresses, you know, the screenwriter is getting what he needs. And then, you know, we sort of just keep the set kind of loose. Mm-hmm. And making the film was a very kind of Cassavetes feel. A lot of improvisation was allowed, a lot of allowance for variables like the weather. You know, like it starts to rain, well then what are we going to do here? Are we going to include that element? Are we going to pretend it's not happening? And yeah, really, I can't speak more highly that, you know, Peter, he's now based in southern Baja. He's now in in a little town called Pescadero, north of Cabo San Lucas.
Yeah.
And he and his wife have a little hotel, and he travels back to the States to do his work out of LA for a couple weeks, and then he'll go back to Baja. So he's got it figured out.
It's good. That's a good. That's a good work-life balance there, I think. You know?
Yes.
But so tell me about this. You guys, you came down to Colombia. Did you know anything about Colombia when you came down to film?
No, I mean, I had done as much research as one can do on Google Maps, and I had starred a couple places that I thought, you know, as a producer, I thought, well, this would be a good location. Like, you know, Guatavita seems like something that's magical going on there. I think we owe it to ourselves to get out of Bogota and see the surrounding Savannah. And so I mentioned to Andrew, I said, look, can one of the locations be spreading ashes into a lake? Because I myself had a beautiful experience with an ash spreading, a ceremony of a dear friend of my father's in South Lake Tahoe.
Mm-hmm.
And when we spread his ashes into the lake, they created a shape that looks like a heart. You know, mm-hmm. we all stood on the boat and said, do you see what I see? Like, that looks like a smile from the heavens. And so I thought that the meeting of the ash to water, you mm-hmm. know, would be a beautiful image. And also water is one of those healing elements. You know, the brothers are very fire. They're very masculine. They're very sun, you know, oriented. And Andrew and I are both like that, you know, very, very creative forces. And that can, you know, we can work in harmony, but sometimes we butt heads because of it. And to just have a bathing, you know, there's a lot of that in the film. There's a lot of sumptuous shots of baptisms, really. Mm-hmm. And so we didn't have a scene there. But Andrew just placated my desire to go to Guatavita like as a tourist, you know. And it's still some of my favorite. Like, I can viscerally, I remember when these two dogs just came running down the hill and joined the shot, you know. And I can't remember the famous director who said, you know, never work with animals or children. Feel every scene. But these two brother dogs just came and joined us. And one was a golden retriever and one a black lab. And, you know, I'm in a brown jacket and Andrew's in a black. You know, it just felt like so serendipitous to be accompanied. And, of course, in the edit, Aaron said, yeah, I think we should have this. We'll just include this and have this sort of be underscored by music.
Mm.
And we moved forward in the edit of the film, relying a lot on the idea of the composition of the score.
Mm-hmm.
Then serendipity struck again when we were put in touch with a man named Louis Febre, F-E-B-R-E. And Louis is half Cuban American. Mm. He's a Cuban American. And he saw a rough cut, and I mean 3-hour rough cut of the film. And he turned around in his chair, I'll never forget it, and he said, I want to work with you guys. And he won an Emmy for his work on Smallville, the Superman television program.
Mm-hmm.
And he has a dollar framed in his house with a little S for Superman under, like, Washington's face. And he pointed to it and he said, you know, yeah, I did Superman for the money, sure. And I'm going to do a project, but it affords me the opportunity to do a project like yours.
Mm-hmm.
And Lewis, for no money, and actually paid out of pocket to get some musicians to play the orchestration, he donated his time and his art to the story and really lifted it alongside Peter's cinematography into a place that's just such a pleasure still to this day for me to watch. You know, it's not so much the story and the writing, it's like the visuals and the sound. You know, when the three come together, it really is a special film.
Yeah, but that, and that sort of jumps me ahead. It's like the music. You know, again, I don't know, yeah. but the music is mentioned in that Hollywood Reporter review. I mean, it's drawn on. They wouldn't write about it if it weren't worth writing about.
Yes, it is totally it's noteworthy, and anyone who goes and sees it, you can close your eyes in the middle of the film and just be taken away and open them again and see the images and say, yes, these line up. Like, as independent filmmakers, the rights to music, the music rights are kind of complicated because they're twofold. There's the person who authored the music and then the person who's playing the music. And to get those rights and secure those rights, it's a costly endeavor, especially for good music, like anybody. Sound.
Yeah, you hear.
And this is decidedly not that.
Mm-hmm. So tell me a little bit. I mean, Andrew wrote the screenplay. Andrew Perez wrote the screenplay. And tell us a little bit more about the story, because it takes in a lot of Colombia. And I think that's, of course, of massive interest to my listeners.
And to me, too. When I arrived in L.A. after living in New York for 8 years, I filmed my first independent feature called Blue Highway. And it took place it was a road trip movie from Wilmington, North Carolina, or Wilmington, Virginia. Oh, where's Wilmington?
Wilmington's North Carolina, surely.
Yeah, North Carolina. I know Colombia better than I know the United States, but that's not an embarrassment. And then it ended in L.A. So it was this long road trip movie. And I got back, and Andrew asked me how it went, and I said, man, I just want to travel and make films. It was so fun. And he said, well, I've been working on a story for maybe 3 years, just kind of kicking it around in my head.
Mm.
And I said, well, tell me more. And he said, well, I have a half brother, and it's around that relationship of sharing the same father, the same patriarchal figure who might not be as well known. You know, the mother's sort of, bear the brunt of the upbringing of these two boys, but they share the similar father and how that informs their relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And the father country is Colombia. And then he said, then he went right into producer mode and said, you know, I have a bunch of family there. We would be well bestowed both in Bogota and Medellin and Cali. And I said, well, as long as we get to go to Cartagena, you know, that was really the only place that I knew was the Macondo of Gabriel Garcia Marquez and Love in the Time of Cholera. I envisioned the click-clack of the horse-drawn carriages and the gas lamps and really romanticized Cartagena in my mind. So I really wanted to get up there. And Andrew said, well, the idea is that they're spreading the ashes of the father in these places that meant something to him. And in doing so...
So in doing so, the two brothers...
And who they are.
Yeah,
and they really form a relationship.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. And so does the film switch into, let's say, images from the past, the father's upbringing in Colombia?
Exactly.
Okay. So
Sebastián Eslava is a very well known Colombian actor. He's won an award for his work in La Niña, and he also is on Narcos season 3, I believe. He plays the young lawyer son of one of the three Cali cartel heads. And we met him here in Bogota on the third day of filming, and he came and saw the way we worked and said, yeah, I'll work with you guys. And once we got Sebastian on board, it really changed the role that the father was playing, because Andrew quickly realized what an asset Sebas is to any project.
He is
an exemplary actor and so smart. He is approaches the scenes. He knows exactly the circumstances. It's sort of like, you know, stumbling upon an all-star when you're playing a game of pickup basketball. You know, and that's really what it felt like. And so he also brought on board Juanita Arias, another Colombian actress. The two of them had a rapport because they worked together previously. Mm-hmm. So not only did we get Sebastian on the third day, we also were connected with Juanita. And the two of them, their chemistry is fantastic. And they really carry the romanticism of a young love. And they do it effortlessly because they know one another and they've worked together before. So it was very, very little that we had to do as far as Aaron's work in directing them. We sort of just placed the shots on the coast of Santa Marta, on the balcony in Cartagena, and we let them, you know, do what they do, really. Aaron's really great at giving everybody space in which to sort of create and live. And boy, did they bring a life to these two roles that I think myself and I don't think Andrew either really expected. And it was just a revelation, really, to be working with them.
Phenomenal. Phenomenal to hear that. We certainly have a fair number of out of work and working actors in Colombia. So good that you could tap into that reservoir here.
Yes, definitely.
Listen, we're talking to Dylan Porter. This is Colombia Calling, episode 247. We're talking a little bit about the movie Bastards y Diablos, which gets its nationwide Colombia release on the 18th of October on Cine Colombia. So get out there. If you're in Medellin, Cali, Bogota, get out there to see this movie. Make it a success, more than it already is, because as we go into the break after this first segment, let me just read some of the accolades here. It's the winner of the Best Feature, the Ashland Independent Festival, the winner of the Best Narrative Feature at the Ashland as well, got an Audience Award at Durango, and a nominee at the LA Film Festival. I mean, this is high praise, definitely.
And after Andrew's, we premiered in Fort Townsend Film Festival, they loved his screenplay so much, they awarded him a month-long fellowship, where they put him up in a cabin in the woods to have him write his next screenplay. So a lot of great things come out of our festival run.
That's very cool indeed. So we're going to take a short break now and come back with Dylan Porter and talk further about Colombia and Bastards y Diablos, and of course drum up more interest so that we can sell out this first weekend on the national release. So thank you for listening. We'll come right back with Dylan Porter. Don't go away. Welcome back to the Colombia Calling podcast. I'm Richard McCall. This is episode 247, and as you'll know because you've been listening thus far, we're talking to Dylan Porter, who is leading actor, co-leading actor, producer, just about everything involved in the making of the movie. It came out in 2015, Bastards y Diablos, and it's getting its launch here in Colombia 3 years later, but, you know, there's no time like the present, on the 18th of October in Cine Colombia. So we've got to get together and fill up those seats and sell out the weekend. Sell out the weekend in Medellin, Cartagena, Medellin, Cali, and Bogota. That's right. Yes, that's where it's at. So let's talk more about this movie. I mean, you take in all of these amazing areas because the wish of the deceased father is to have his ashes spread in places that are of importance to him. The storyline, the estranged brothers, these things have been, I'm not going to lie, they've been done before, but through the music that I've heard about, and of course the cinematography, this is a special movie. And for us here in Colombia, it's a special movie. It's filmed in Colombia, but this is Andrew's thing. I mean, it's his Colombian roots.
It is. And it is impossible to talk to him and not feel his passion for the project. he's maybe the only person I know that can talk about acting as though it is something we all need rather than just fame for distraction's sake.
Mm-hmm.
And look, I mean, in the United States right now, when you look at the climate, it seems like a poisonous one to me. You know, it seems like there are lines being drawn and people are asked to be on one side of the fence or another side of the fence.
Mm-hmm.
And what's beautiful about this film for me is it shows how easy it is to really build, you know, bridges. And it takes, you know, admitting when you've wronged someone or have done wrong. It takes forgiving yourself or your brother or your father. It takes a tough look in the mirror sometimes, you know, to have those realizations. And I think that's what makes the film special, is it never lost its finger on that emotional pulse. You know, I think in all of the running around, the other reason, to show the boys in all these places to show the natural richness of Colombia, yes. Mm. And to put us through a journey, yes, because it's not really acting when we look exhausted and sunburned there.
Yeah. That's part of it, isn't it? Is that
we were exhausted. There's a bit of gameplay. And life is that. It is a long journey, and one in which if you are connected, if you have a family, if you have a community, it is easier to weather the storm and to deal with things like loss and grief and anger. And Andrew was so fluid in his writing, as from page to stage, as we call it, you know, from going from something that is an inorganic thing to a living, breathing organisms. And the more people you invite in, the more life energy surrounds this idea. And the more people we can share it with, more people that decide to come into the theaters, the more life the film will have. So to have it back here in Colombia, and it has been a journey in the post-production. You know, making the film was the easy part, really.
Yeah.
It's been post-production and distribution that has been difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And so this really is our dream, because we had the chance to sell the film a couple times along the way after our successful festival run, and they wanted worldwide rights, which means that they take the film in all five areas, North America, South America, Africa, Europe, and Asia, and then they get to sell it as they see fit. And a lot of the feedback we got is that it would be good for television,
mm-hmm.
and we would make our money back that way.
Mm.
But we all held in our hearts that this movie deserves to be seen on the big screen for the reasons you just spoke of. The cinematography and the score can really only be felt in a theater.
Mm-hmm.
But I love it because of the cathartic experience.
Mm-hmm.
When you're watching something on a laptop or on your phone, it's not as moving as when you're in an environment with living, breathing people around you. Now, I know it's in the dark, granted,
yeah.
but you can feel that when someone laughs at something that made you uncomfortable, it softens you a little bit. You're like, okay, yeah, I see myself and my relationship to my sister in the way these brothers are comporting themselves. Or, I never forgave my father for forgetting my eighth birthday and for it being a shitty party. You know, like, and I can see how petty that seems now, 40 years down the line, but how good it is to admit those feelings and to release that. And to do that in a communal setting, I think, is why we love cinema. You know, why Buster Keaton and Charlie Chaplin were onto something. You know, it is magic in that screen.
It's not going away, cinema. I mean, it's evolving, but it's not going away. But I think what you were touching on there, that the lines are drawn at the moment in the US, it's something that we're going through here too. The lines have been drawn in Colombia, and that, you know, you'll have known about the elections this year, 2018,
yeah.
and you're either with us or with against us type thing. So that draws me quite nicely to this next sort of point, is cinema, when it deals with Colombia on the whole, not everything, of course, tends to focus a lot on the negative, tends to focus on, I mean, you know, Narcos, of course, is that, I'll go back to Narcos because of the Netflix thing and so on. But I'll go back to it. As I love it that friends of mine outside of Colombia will call me up and said, I have no idea about that assassination or this or that. And so, it, you know, it's not aimed at someone like me. You know, I live here, I work here, I'm immersed in the culture. It's not aimed at, it's aimed, there's a lot of educational purpose for a series like that. But of course, you know, it's very easy. We just had, what's the one with the Tom Cruise one filmed in Medellin, a lot of it. He was the pilot for the Escobar cartel. I can't remember what it was called. Oh, well, actually, you know, it's a pleasant, brainless, let's say, entertainment. It require a lot based on true stories, but again, always focusing on the same stuff. You don't veer into that kind of side of things in this story.
We don't shy away from it. Mm. The brothers, one of their first lines is like, I feel safe here. Do you feel safe?
Yeah.
I feel safe.
Yeah.
And they do, because they're surrounded by family. And I think that a lot of Americans, if they're honest with themselves about traveling to other countries, that is one question that comes up. Mm. Will I feel secure? You know, it's why I think the McDonald's of the world are so successful. You're not buying a good meal. You're buying the sense of security that you know what you're going to get. And I think a lot of us are pushed when we travel outside of our comfort zones. And I think that that is very well reflected in the film. Mm-hmm. And I think that a lot of us find ourselves in a time of growth when we're pushed out of our comfort zones. Mm-hmm. So when the lines get drawn and when the divisive rhetoric starts to rear its sometimes ugly head, it makes me feel uncomfortable. And the only thing to do is to move through that uncomfortability and to come out on the other side with a little bit more understanding about myself. Okay, so there's lines being drawn in the sand. There are things being said that I don't resonate with. Okay, where can I find my voice?
Yeah.
Where can I say my piece?
Yeah.
Where can I do my work in the world to shed some light on humanity that I think is worth seeing and worth showing?
Mm-hmm.
And there's so much humanity in Colombia, in Latin America in general, that it gets overseen or covered up in the news that is a 24-hour circuit of clickbait in America. And it is better to have an enemy, to have drama with an enemy, than it is to have a friend as far as selling newspapers go. And so I think there's been a lot of drummed-up drama that is absolutely false, or at least not false, but just not a complete story. So yes, you know, in the brothers have a conflict in the split up. My character goes on a bender. You know, he goes out drinking and partying and does a couple bumps, and you know, wants to like celebrate himself. It's short lived.
Mm.
It doesn't last. The party doesn't last.
Mm.
At some point, reality sets in. And what happens when your drinking buddies from college are gone? And what happens, when the girl you like to go out dancing with, when the daytime comes, you know, whom are you left with? And I think the answer is family.
Mm.
And the answer is that we'll always be tethered that way. And once you can get kind of small to get tethered to your own identity and your own roots, then you can grow big again, and when you can go out into the world, it's not just for a quick bit of funsies, it's for something more profound, it's for a greater connection. And I think this film shows how even in with a lack of you know, faculties of language, even while being lost, you know, without Google Maps, gasp, you know, you ask for directions, you make connections, you make friends, and it is unbelievable the sorts of serendipity that begin to happen. And when you get turned on, or when you get awakened to those sorts of things, it really is a whole different life. It really is an incredible lens to view the world through. So I appreciate this film for helping me see the world like that.
There's a whole lot of context in that last section you just said. A lot to talk about. But so I assume, I mean, really, you went through a period of discomfort, let's say, in the discovery of your role and the development of your character, to then come out the other side, and it's an identity thing. And of course, I would suggest Andrew being of Colombian descent as well, the identity of his roots. So you're kind of like the gringo brother.
Yeah. And, you know, as I was, you know, born in the States, but my parents love Mexico. Mm-hmm. And they had my sister Kaya in Mexico, mm-hmm. so that she could be a citizen by birth so that we could own property there.
Nice.
So when I was in kindergarten, we lived down in the Baja. Uh-huh. And so my first memories really are being sort of followed around. During elementary, like, recess, and being asked a bunch of questions because I was this little blonde hair gringo, and everybody, and my best friend Manuel Alejandro, his father told him that if he learned English, he would take him to Disneyland.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So Manuel stuck by my side every day. We would have lunch together, we would have recess, and he would absorb all of my English, and I would try to absorb all of his Spanish. And that was the closest thing I've ever had to a brother.
Nice.
And so it was a beautiful, and I remember his father got angry. He was like, told my parents, you know, I am upset at your son, Dylan. And they said, why? He said, well, I promised Manuel Alejandro that if he learned English, I would take him to Disney World. And now he's learned so quickly from your son. We have that trip this year. So my brother Alejandro got a trip out of the deal, and I got a friendship. My roots, though they are, you know, I'm German, yeah. English, Irish, American, you know, mutt. I've always been a Latinophile. I've always, I did an exchange program to Costa Rica through Partners of the Americas, which was an exchange set up by Kennedy. And Oregon was lucky enough to get Costa Rica, and so the stability of its democracy kept the exchange going for now in its 50th year. I did a Rotary exchange program to Brazil. So I really love the sense of family. Yeah. The sense of three generations living under the same roof is not a rarity. You know, in America, I think it's sort of sad the way we take care of the elderly, or the way the elderly sequester themselves in Floridian retreat centers with their giant walls and kind of shut themselves off from the world, or maybe the young people shut themselves off from them. I'm not sure, but there seems to be a missed opportunity in the United States as far as passing on of history, of family values. And I think, you know, as above, so below, or as the micro family, so the macro family. I think we had more of a connection to our lineage and our roots. We might be in a better place socially right now.
Really fascinating, because you're tapping into one of the most fundamental issues and themes of an identity and culture, and especially in, let's say, the Latin world, that of family. It's been a huge thing of something, you know, I wrestle with on a daily basis, as coming from an incredibly small family, from obviously Northern European mutt as well, in Canadian, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, immersed and taken into a family, you know, my wife's family, as if I were one of their own. And while I love it, and I love seeing them all, I love it, I also find it incredibly suffocating too, because it's so many of them. And a few episodes ago, I had an English girl on the show who's living in Antioquia in the countryside, and we ended up talking about her relationship status. And she said, relationships here are the collective. Everybody needs to know everything. There is no privacy and so on. And so you can take good and the bad from both sides, but I think it's very strong. You know, I think it's very positive, this family element. And of course that must come through in the movie, but I think it's all of our, of Andrew's relatives are all of the actors, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah, the entirety of Act One to me is the wave of the family. They show up and it's a little party that that abuelita's going to have. And there are 20 people and all, you know, grabbing the boys and saying, your father was proud of you. You know, they're hearing things they've never heard before from strangers who are looking deeply in their eyes, you know, and emotion. And it's emotional because it's Andrew's cousins telling him they love him, you know, and Andrew hasn't seen them since his father's death. So the humanity is just, it's palpable. And to be around it, you know, I just got swept up in it and felt immediately part of the family. And you know, to be honest, like, I just reached out to a distant cousin, or a cousin who's grown distant, rather. Yeah. A first cousin who I hadn't had conversation with in an embarrassingly long time. And I kept the text kind of casual, you know, just like, hey, are you still a vegetarian? You know, what a soft ask, you know, just like touching a toe in the water of maybe it's uncomfortable. I don't know who drifted from whom, but it's time to get a little bit closer. And I think, you know, the suffocation you mentioned, I think is funny because the brothers are kind of wide-eyed, like, you tell us then. You direct us because we're lost in this. The father gets kind of a cryptic last will and testament. And so it's not explicitly said where the boys need to go. So they definitely need to lean on the family for help. And that is sort of the dramatic tension, is where are these kind of two lost boys going to go next in Colombia?
It's excellent. I like that. I like that the element of doubt and the element of discovery. What's the relationship like between the two actors and yourself and Andrew? Was Dion and Andrew's name is what in the...
Eduardo.
So Dion and Eduardo, what, I mean, it seems to me from just having read about it and seen the cuts is that they're pretty competitive.
Yeah, and I think they have been estranged from one another long enough that they never really thought they'd have to deal with one another, maybe. And so in this, you know, sort of the first scene, even, it's sort of their quick catch up, you know, with a last cigarette before boarding the flight from Fort Lauderdale down to Bogota. You know, one is in New York, one is in LA. Mm-hmm. You know, they are, neither of them are very satisfied in their careers. Neither of them are, you know, connected in a relationship. So they're definitely, it's a coming of age story, maybe 10 years too late. You know, they're 30, you know, looking at life saying like, what is it? You know, where is my place? And I don't know. And so I think they both feel like they're missing something. Mm-hmm. And I think they both resent or blame the other, because I think it's like, if I had a father, maybe I'd feel more whole as a man, but I didn't have a father because dad was busy spending time with his other son, and vice versa. The other one projected that same feeling, that same wound. Well, I would have had attention if not for this other guy. Well, the truth be told, neither of them were really getting what they needed, and what they really need is a relationship with one another. And that is the father's last intention, and he gets his wish, however messy and sloppy it is. I mean, the boys are there for one another, but you know, not always, and competition, I think, is inevitable, and I love it. I love competition. I love games. I love sports. For that reason, I think it's something that can bring everybody together. And somewhere along the line, I think competition got perverse or perverted, and now it seems like we either celebrate everybody or we celebrate nobody, or there's no winners or no losers, or I don't know. I mean, my nephew was in an alternative sort of education in Oregon, which looked like, you know, no grades, no marks, but also looked like a lot of outdoor time, responsibility for raising animals and food and a connection to nature. And I liked it. And I could tell in reading him stories that his reading level wasn't that high. Mm-hmm. And when he then transitioned into a more traditional school where you got grades, he saw where he landed. And then he looked around and he was like, huh, you know, I could try a little bit harder. And I just got a text from my sister, and he's 11 now, and his report card is, you know, all 90s, couple hundreds, and an 85. So he's doing very well. And I think something about those grades and that score helps. And yet keeping score in a relationship never really does, you know. So it's a fine line, and I don't know. That was part of what I loved most about the screenplay, was like Andrew's subtlety in dealing with that idea of competition, especially two men competing for what, for the affection of a deceased father.
Yeah,
you know, what are they like? There's some hard conversations that don't get had. They get sort of shown. They get embodied. And I really love that as an actor. I really rather as an actor be in action rather than in a sedative sort of talk kind of play or movie. That's not what this is.
And it sounds to me, as we wind down this episode, it sounds to me, Dylan, that you and Andrew are kind of like the dream team working together. You've got a great, you know, friendship and a rapport. So what's next for you guys? You're gonna collaborate again together?
Well, Andrew right now has an audition for something that I know he's going to book, where he plays a rapper character. It's a television show.
Yeah.
Myself, I've been going back to theater. I just finished playing Hamlet in the Park.
Nice.
Shakespeare in the Park, which was a dream come true. It was like a Viking era Hamlet. It was so satisfactory. And then I followed it up with I wrote my first show. I called it Dylan on Dylan, where it was an evening of songs of Bob Dylan, interspersed with some memories with like Woody Guthrie and Joan Baez.
Nice.
I was so proud of everybody who participated in it. It was such a roaring success, and is going to encourage me to do more. So I'm heading to New York. I'm going to direct a whacked out version of A Midsummer Night's Dream in a place called House of Yes, which is in Bushwick. I couldn't be more excited. I love working with Shakespeare. I decided that I will only work with great text. I will not work with anything less than. So that kind of narrows it down for an actor sometimes in Hollywood. When you read some scripts, you're like, what? Who? Why? Oh, there's money behind it? Oh, even worse. You know, it can be soul oppressing. And so I'm saying yes to things that are nurturing the artist within. And yes, working with Andrew always does that. So I definitely hope and foresee us collaborating again in the future. Maybe he'll act in a screenplay that I write.
Excellent. I love to hear this positive ending to this really fascinating conversation with Dylan Porter, actor, producer, but just participant in everything to do with this movie Bastards y Diablos. Thank you so much for sharing a lot more than just about the movie. You've pretty much given us a whole sort of backdrop into your philosophy on life, and so thank you for all of this.
Well, my pleasure. I like to say that, you know, all art is political.
I think so too.
We need voices, and I would say to your listenership that if they have an idea for a screenplay, or they want to know more about what it's like to make an independent film, or they want to ask us questions, we're very accessible. Just Bastards y Diablos on Instagram. You can direct message us. You can find me on Facebook. Don't hesitate to come and to ask questions. And if you've ever been curious about the filmmaking process, you'll be talking to three guys that just finished, School of Hard Knocks on how to make a film, how not to make a film. You know, what are the pitfalls, etc. And we just love to share what we've learned. So if there's filmmakers out there or wannabe writers out there, please come introduce yourself. You know, we're here.
Excellent. That's very, very generous of you indeed. We've been talking to Dylan Porter, one of the cast of Bastards y Diablos. And for those of you in Colombia at the moment, the 18th of October in Cali, Medellin and Bogota, Cine Colombia, we're working to get those sold out. We want to see this movie, rise higher than it already has. It's an award-winning movie, indie flick, but this is is what it's all about, the blood and guts of cinema, really getting out there and people with ideas, people with no budget. And that's where the element comes into it, where the truth behind this, let's say, art form really drives the medium. So it's been a great deal of fun talking to Dylan Porter. We have to end now, unfortunately. We don't have any more time, but this has been episode 247 of the Columbia Calling podcast. Thank you again. Check out Bastards y Diablos, 9.4 out of 10 on the Internet Movie Database reviews. That's high. That's higher than most things. So thank you again. This has been Columbia Calling. I've been Richard McCall talking to Dylan Porter. Please tune in again next week. It's been great fun. And of course, go out and see the movie. Bye-bye.